Ultra Healthy.
My conversation with author Rebecca Searle came just in the nick of time. What city has an endless amount of people always on the go? Drivers that dart in and out of traffic. But a city that has a story to tell, with its rich history, experiences, and Broadway shows. It's the Big Apple, the city that never sleeps, New York. Our casual conversation about Rebecca's new novel, The Edge of Falling, went far beyond book talk. As a New Yorker, Rebecca not only allows us to take a peek at her life as a writer, but we also get a glimpse of New York through the setting of her novel. Enjoy. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing awesome. This is Deetra with a leisure moment.
Hello, hello, Deetra. So nice to speak with you.
Absolutely. And before we officially start, please give me the pronunciation of your last name.
It's Searle, Rebecca Searle.
Rebecca Searle. Okay, I want to make sure that I get it correct.
Thank you, Deetra. I was going to ask you for your name, Deetra. Yes.
And you know what? I will say that I've decided to go ahead and give people my name as well, because we've done several podcasts and I feel bad because I haven't given them that information. And they'll say Deetra because it's spelled that way.
Right. Yes, yes. Deetra. It's a beautiful name, by the way.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. So glad that you could join us today. Now, I think I may have saw a message that it's raining in New York now.
It is. We've been experiencing quite a bit of rain for the past few days, actually, and I think it's going to continue through tomorrow. So,
wow. Well, we're here in South Carolina, and the weather has been a little, a bit overcast, but today I'm going to have to say you're going to be a little jealous because it is bright and sunny.
Oh my goodness. I mean we've just had, and I know we've all, you know, the country over, it's been a pretty brutal 6 months weather wise.
Right.
So I'm very much looking forward to the spring. I happen to like the winter. I like all seasons. I like the rain. It's very cozy. It's nice. It's great to write. But I think we're all due for some sunshine. So don't begrudge you yours. I'm very happy you're experiencing it.
Well, while we're talking about New York, let me let you in on a little secret.
Yeah.
So last year, my at the time sixth grader came home and said, "Mama, I want to go to New York with the orchestra." And I thought to myself, "Well, your mother has never gone to New York, so the only way that you're going to go to New York is if I go as a chaperone." So guess where we're going? This Wednesday night, 14-hour drive with lots of middle schoolers. We're going to New York.
Oh my goodness, that's fantastic!
So I'm very excited.
Okay, so what part of the city are you staying in?
Well, we're actually going to be staying. We're staying in New Jersey.
Okay.
We're staying in New Jersey, but we're going into New York every day. The kids are going to be playing with one of the orchestras there. We're going
to be seeing
The Lion King and seeing some live
fabulous
shows. I am so excited. So really, she's in there packing right now. I have packed absolutely nothing.
I won't keep you too long yet, Ben.
Oh,
how
no
exciting.
So we
oh
are,
my goodness, that's so fantastic.
Can I
give one piece of advice?
Oh, I want any advice you can give me.
I just make a point, and I know that you're going to have such a busy pack schedule, as you should, because there's so much to do and see here, but make it a point to just take an hour or so and just wander. My favorite thing to do in New York is just to walk without agenda. It's just the most remarkable thing to do here, because the city is so beautiful and it changes from block to block, and just take a little time just to meander.
I think we will definitely find time for that. I will say this, my daughter, she loves to try different things. And the first thing that she said was, "Mama, whatever we do, we will not try anything that we can find right here in South Carolina as far as food wise.
Hey, you know, that's a good stuff. Travel rule.
Yes.
I'm going to adopt that. That's a good travel rule.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to do that and are excited. So we're staying there from Wednesday, coming back early Monday morning. So we're going to have a great time.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I hope you have a good soundtrack queued up for the drive over here too.
Oh yes, I'm working on that as well.
Okay, good.
I do know what book will be in my hands as I'm riding for 14 hours with some little middle schoolers, The Edge of Falling. We are so excited to talk to you about your book. I want to kind of get to know you a little bit more before we jump right in. Just doing a little bit of research, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you were in the South recently at the Y'all Fest.
I was.
Tell us a little bit about the Y'all Fest experience. We were unable to attend this year, but I'm hoping to put that on my list for next year because it's so close to home. It's about a 3.5 hour drive for us.
Oh my goodness, it was so fun. You know, I've never really spent any time in the South before. Mm-hmm. So it was wonderful to be there and so many different YA authors came to the event. I mean, I'm just trying to think. There was Veronica Roth and Libba Bray oh my goodness, so many. Of course, they're all going to fly out of my head right now.
That's okay.
And it was just 3 days of panels of different young adult authors talking about everything from, there was like a dystopian panel with Lauren Oliver
I think Cassandra Clare was there as well.
Yeah. Was Cassandra Clare there? I don't know if she was there. I don't know if she was there this year. I think she was there last year.
Oh, okay,
but anywho, there were a ton of wonderful, wonderful people there. And it was just, I have been to a few different conventions at this point. And far and away, the most teen readers, I think, come to Y'all Fest. Of anything that I've personally ever seen. And it's such a wonderful experience because it's authors who are really there, you know, most of them on their own dime. It's not really publisher organized, it's author organized. So authors come there, you know, on their own dime to see friends and to really interact with readers. And it's just such a wonderful community feeling. I mean, that's one of the things I love about writing and publishing in YA is how what a community it is. And how everyone is really friends and how everyone really supports each other. So it was just a blast. And of course the food is fantastic. It's all going to fly out of my head, but we were lucky enough to get some recommendations and went to some like really fantastic restaurants and tried some very cool things. And it was too short. I was only there for like 48 hours, but I definitely want to go again this year.
Well, I have to tell you, if you go again next year, you have got to go to Kaminsky's. They have the best desserts ever.
Okay.
Yes.
You better email me that after this so I can write it down. Yeah, I need to know that.
Oh, wonderful. You just won't be able to leave that place. And I have to laugh a little bit, Rebecca, because I really thought I was the only one that says anywho. You said it briefly a second ago. I say it all the time. You're like, what did you say? Anywho.
That's so true. I do say anywho. I say it a lot. It's an unusual transition, but I do employ it.
Well, let's talk about The Edge of Falling. And you know, sometimes it's a treat when I can talk about a book with an author, when I've read the book and we can discuss characters. But this book has recently come out and I want you to just tell us and the listeners about The Edge of Falling. It's new for me. I can't wait to begin on Tuesday with this book. One of the things that really stands out to me first is the cover. And for me, I must say, it's always at first glance for me. I look at covers because each cover is unique and different. And this cover is very unique and different. So tell us what you would like to share with us about The Edge of Falling.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for your kind words on the cover. You know, I can't take credit for it because, of course, you know, a team of brilliant designers at Simon Schuster have come up with it. But it was very important to me that it be emotionally evocative and that it in some way express New York City. Mm-hmm. And I think it does a really good job of that. It feels very New York to me. And, you know, we were talking earlier about New York. And this book, you know, The Edge of Falling, is in a lot of ways a bit of a love letter to New York City. I've lived here for about 7.5 years, and it was only a few years ago that I really felt like I could set a book here, that I knew the city well enough, knew the pace of it, and sort of like the way it breathes and moves to such a degree that I could really make it my setting and make it come to life in a way that felt really organic and real and could really illuminate my story. So, The Edge of Falling is about a girl, Kagi Caulfield, who is dealing with her role in the death of her younger sister. And the book opens in August. In January, her little sister passed away at their Hamptons home. And in May, Kagi saved a girl's life from jumping to her death on the roof of her New York City apartment building. But nothing is really as it seems. And sort of as the novel progresses, you are let in more as to what transpired in January and also then what transpired in May. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's I would say it's a little bit darker than my first novel. Uh-huh. It's certainly a book about grief and about the process of grief. And, you know, I mean, hopefully also redemption. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I really love about publishing in the YA sphere is that ultimately our stories are ones of hope. So I think Kagi's journey is one to self-forgiveness and sort of coming to terms with these things that have happened in her life in the last year.
So tell us, how hard or was it a challenge to write her story on paper? You know, you have her character, you hold it in your mind and in your heart, and then you're ready to release her life onto paper and then release her to the world. Was that hard for you to release her story?
Yeah, you know, my first book, When You Were Mine, was really so much of the experiences in that book were mine, things that I had been through in high school, things that I had been through, you know, after it was sort of based very closely on a heartbreak that I went through myself. Mm-hmm. And so the whole process of writing The Edge of Falling was so different because I was really exploring themes and circumstances that I wasn't intimately familiar with. And I, you know, it sounds sort of cliche to say, but in a lot of ways, I feel that I really taught my first narrator, Rosalind, like I gave her my experience. And I think in a lot of ways, Kagi really taught me. Like I feel like I was really guided through the process of writing this book by her, as opposed to sort of leading her through what her emotional journey was and what she had to go through. It was a challenging book to write, I think, because it does really go to some very deep emotional places. Mm-hmm. And I can remember sitting down with my writing partner when I was about to start the book, and I was speaking to her about what I thought the narrative was going to be, what the trajectory was going to be, and I said to her, you know, I feel frightened of what she has to go through. I remember feeling nervous about whether I would be able to really take her to those places and what that would look like for me. And my writing partner, who is also a young adult novelist, the lovely Lila Sale, mm-hmm. said to me, she was like, she said, and I'll never forget it, it like kind of makes me cry thinking about it. She said, just stay close to her. Mm-hmm. And I think that,
powerful.
I think that, yeah, really, really. And I think that is, that's really what our job and also like what our gift is as writers is staying close to these characters and allowing them to guide us and to in a lot of ways teach us. So I feel like I was given a tremendous amount through writing this book.
And as you say, to stay as your writing partner said, to stay close mm-hmm. to her, and that's you know, what you took to heart to stay close to her. How many times have we as readers, we've opened up the book, we can't put the book down because mm-hmm. we are staying close to the characters that we become attached to.
And we
feel their pain. We go through the situations that they go through. We're right there visualizing mm-hmm. every single moment. So what you just said was pretty powerful, because as a reader, those, of course, are the feelings that we get and should get when we're reading such powerful writing. Now, you talked about a writing partner. How important to you is it to have a writing partner? I know some people have a writing partner, some people don't. Mm-hmm. But I think I can tell through some of your Twitter posts that you do have a close a writing buddy.
I do. Like I said, her name is Lila Sale. She's the author of This Song Will Save Your Life and Mostly Good Girls and Past Perfect. We have sort of a unique writing partner relationship, I would say, in that we are not each other's editors. So we actually never read each other's work until it's in finished book form. Like, she'll read my galley, and that's mm-hmm. the first time she'll ever read my story. Of course, I'll share bits and pieces with her. You know, we'll read lines of dialogue, and I'll maybe just like send her a paragraph. But we decided early on, I think, that it was really important that we just be champions of each other and supporters.
Right.
And so, as opposed to being each other's editors, which, you know, there are other people in my life who do that. We're lucky at this stage in our careers to have agents who are very involved in our work and of course editors. But I think we've sort of allowed ourselves to have this relationship that is just supportive. And in that way, I think our partnership really extends beyond the work. It's sort of a writing partnership in what it means to be a writer, if that makes sense. So,
yes,
so everything
does.
That comes with it, sometimes putting out a novel is, you know, of course it's really wonderful. It's very exciting. And sometimes it can be very scary because you're exposing a huge part of yourself and work that you've kept very close to the vest for years out to the world. And so we really just want to be there for each other's experience. Mm-hmm. Whether it be on the page or off the page or whatever. And I mean, it's been infinitely career changing to have her and to have a friend who really that deeply understands what it feels like to not only write, but also to publish.
Right. My background, the last assignment that I had in the classroom was a writing teacher of mm-hmm. 125 seventh graders. So, you know, you spoke recently about your first book being slightly based on some experiences. And that just takes me back to when I was in the classroom and how I would encourage my students to talk about or write about experiences. You know, when they face writer's block, write about what you know.
Yeah.
And there were many times where I would encourage them to have a peer, to talk things over with their peer during the mm-hmm. writing process, because it helps to be able to share. So thank you for sharing that relationship that you have with your writing partner. I feel very strongly as well that it's good to be able to have someone that you can kind of bounce ideas off of or just kind of, you know, discuss those pieces with them.
Absolutely.
You know, if you had to provide some guidance mm-hmm. for that aspiring writer, tell us what would be one piece of guidance that you would want to share, maybe for that high school student that's aspiring to write their first novel. What advice would you give them?
Well, the first thing I want to say, and then I want to say a few other things, but the first thing I want to say is to just read as much as you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, to make books your teacher and to study the way other people do it it's infinitely helpful in defining your own voice and also just what you enjoy writing. I mean, I got my MFA at the New School in mm-hmm. fiction, and I wrote short stories. That's what I wanted to do, was I wanted to be a short story author. And I sort of had this idea for a book. It was a novel that's in my desk as well. It should stay there. But I found that the voice really felt like YA to me. And I think part of the reason is because I had been spending so much time in that world. I was becoming friends with people who wrote YA, and I was reading a lot of those books, and all of a sudden something just clicked for me, and it felt really organic. It felt like, oh, I really think that my voice belongs here. Mm-hmm. And so then, of course, I started reading everything I could possibly get my hands on about, you know, how people do it, how people write in this world. And so I think apprenticing yourself to books is the most important thing a young writer can do, is read.
And I would agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That really, truly. And, you know, and the other thing is this, I think that sometimes it can be discouraging to, I'm going to go back a little bit on what I just said, but to read novels and to feel like my writing doesn't compare, it doesn't live up. And what I really want young writers to understand is that that is not close to a first draft. I mean, we have, like I said, we have agents, we have editors, we have friends. There's so many people who read our drafts and who edit them and who give us guidance on everything from story down to line before those books go out into the world. And so I think an understanding of the fact that writing is a very solitary activity, but ultimately, before it becomes a dialogue, it needs to belong to a community. And so I think understanding that you need help and you need other eyes and you need other people's input is really important. And that it's good to ask mm-hmm. for help and to be able, like we were talking about earlier, to be able to create a little bit of a writing community where you can support each other and read each other's work and give each other feedback and guidance, because nobody's first draft looks like what turns out in a book.
Right, right. There are some changes, some editing mm-hmm. pieces, some maybe start all over and start fresh again. So yes, yes.
Yeah, writing really takes place in editing. I mean, that's where it happens. That's where the story takes shape. And so I think understanding that is really important. And also, you know, the other thing about it is I read stuff that I wrote in high school or in college, and I still think that there's sweetness there, and there are some elements of good story. But I've also improved as a writer, and I hope that continues. And I want young writers to understand that that it's a process, and it's a really joyful process. And I think it's exciting to think about just expanding that skill and growing into it. So not everything has to be there in the beginning. That's okay. Right. Just keeping at it, keeping it reading, keeping it practicing. You don't really know the way it's going to turn out.
I will say that from experience as well, some of my best writers, they always had a book in their hand. Always had a book in their hand.
Yeah.
There was never a moment where there wasn't a YA book on their desk, mm-hmm. under their desk, waiting for that moment for extra time to read. So I would agree with you.
And even now, if I'm stuck in a scene or sort of a passage, or I'm not really sure the way a plot point should develop, I'll pick up a book. I'll go online and I'll research who's written a book that kind of like plays with this, and then I'll read it, because we are all still in dialogue about that, and it's still helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think it will always be to get inspired that way.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Tell us a little bit, Rebecca. I think I saw some stills of a shooting for an author video. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I just this week shot like a day in the life author trailer that will probably be available. It's through Yellow Sky Media, these wonderful guys who actually designed my website, RebeccaSorrell.com. and I think it will be available. I'm not quite sure what our timeline is. Sometime over the summer, I would say. And so they shot me. We just, like I said, we did a little bit of a day in the life. So it's me practicing yoga in my apartment, and you know, and doing my writing time at my desk, and going to my local coffee shop, and walking around the city, and you get sort of a peek into what it's like to be me for a day. So it was very fun. We did it over a full day, and then we did a little bit on the second day, but it was really fun. It was I felt kind of glamorous for a day. And as any writer knows, I mean, most of what we do is sit in our sweatpants at our desk, and it, you know, it's right. It's not too glamorous. So to have a camera crew in my apartment for a day was quite fun.
Well, you said it. You said you felt a little glamorous. And I must say, mm-hmm. you know, I always do a little research. And I tried to Google authors and look at them on Twitter. And I thought to myself, I think Rebecca has a love for fashion. Would
I
be
do.
Correct on that? Okay.
Yes, you
so.
Would be.
It's okay. It's okay. I thought she has a love for fashion. And she has a love for Vampire Diaries.
That's so true. Nailed it. Both of them.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to tell you just another little secret as well. So my okay. BFF, who lives in a whole nother state, but we frequently get together. And what she said to me is, Deetra, I'm coming down. I'm coming down for a day. I need you to pick me up from the airport in Atlanta. And we are going to the Mystic Grill, Covington, Georgia. So we... you know, head out to Covington, Georgia. My wonderful husband drives us. And yeah, so we've been there. We went to all the the homes on our own. We didn't do any of the tours, you know, that you have to pay for. We just said, we're just going to do it on our own. So we go to the cemetery, we go to the mansion, and we just had a great little time.
That is so exciting. I'm so envious. I'm so jealous. I would love to do that. I've never been there, and I've never done any of that. I would love to. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of that show.
No, we didn't see any of the stars, but to know that they walked those streets, you know, that they were in that area at some point in time, we were okay with that.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Absolutely.
And it made me want to catch up on all of the. All of the Vampire Diary episodes. She's on top of all of them. I've gotten a little bit behind, but I'm trying to catch up.
It's been a great season. I mean, it's such a great show. It's such a great show. It really is.
Now, and you're a coffee addict. I'm a coffee addict as well.
Oh, hugely. You know, we were lamenting it when we first started speaking about how rough the winter has been. Mm-hmm. And I was... you know, got the sort of like plague that everyone in New York seemed to have mm-hmm. in about March, and I was really sick. And, you know, as sometimes happens when you're sick, you don't drink coffee for a few days. And I went through the horrible withdrawal and the whole thing, right? You
right.
know, you feel terrible for 24 hours. Oh, it's brutal. It's worse than the actual flu itself.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, came out the other end. And a friend of mine said, who's given up coffee 2 years ago, she was like, oh, you know, you haven't had coffee in like a week. You were sick and now you haven't had it. And, you know, don't you feel good? And, you know, do you think that you'll go back to drinking? And I was like, are you kidding me? The first thing I want when I feel better, forget about it. Like I have to have it. So I got over it. And even after I was over the withdrawal, I have to go back to drinking it. Forget it.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. There's never a moment where I do not have a cup of coffee in my hand. My Keurig is like the best device ever in my kitchen. I can't live without it.
Yes, I know. I always say that I like to be caffeinated up until like 3, and at 3 I like to switch to decaf. But I always want some kind of coffee.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Rebecca, yes. I have just had a wonderful casual conversation with you. I'm so excited to be able to read the book this week. I feel a little bit more excited for my trip to New York as well. I mean,
yes.
I may have to send you a Twitter message if I have a question.
Oh my goodness. Please tweet me. I will answer you anytime, day or night. I would love to help you in your New York adventure.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining joining us, and I hope you have a lovely afternoon. I hope that even though it's raining, you'll be able to get in some quiet time, some reading of your own, and just have a very leisure moment doing what you love best.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and I wish the same for you. I had a wonderful time.
Okay, thank you so much, Rebecca. Bye-bye.
Bye.